This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Bald Move Pulp production. Today, we're going to be talking about the new mind-bending... I don't even know. I was going to say timey-wimey, but it's not clear if that's what it is. From the producers and showrunners of Dark comes 1899. This is another German multilingual sci-fi period piece by the powerhouse. I'm going to make a run at their name here. Janse Frege and Baron Bo-Odar. And is kind of exactly what I was expecting, to be honest. What do you think of 1899? So I want to talk about what we think. Spoiler-free reviews, a recommendation of who we think would like this type of show, and then we can talk spoilers. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay.
So we've seen the first two episodes, as should be evident by the title of this podcast. Have not seen any more of it yet, so I don't know how, like you said, timey-wimey it's going to get, how many of the traditional Frege and Odar toys they're going to play with, but it seems like quite a few. If you're familiar with Dark, that series that was had three seasons a couple of years ago, I think it went off the air, you will be right at home, I think, in this show. I will say I was not like sucked in until the very end of episode two. So if you're not like totally in on episode one, I'd give it another one and see what you think about that ending, because that's to me where the story really just kicks into another gear.
When you're talking about the sucking in of it all, I wonder how much of that is because this is different in Dark by the following respects. Dark was a very slow entry into the weird shit. You know, you kind of start in the small town, pretty intimate settings, just a few small families are having problems with their kids, there's some angst there, there might be a cheating partner, stuff like that, and then it gets Stranger Things at the end of episode one, but not too bad. This feels very much like mid-season two Dark, where it's just like everything on the face of it is not what it seems. And there are multiple strange situations and multiple things that are off that you're going to notice within the first 5 or 10 minutes of watching this thing. It's very mysterious and very, at least, science fiction fantasy. So it, whereas, you know, Dark, you could get sucked into kind of like the human drama and the family aspects of it. Like, you barely know any of these people and their relationships, and what relationships and the people you know are probably a cover story or fictitious, or at least they're not being fully. So I think that's, you know, because what sucks you in, it's usually the human drama. You know, this doesn't have much of that, or maybe maybe it's got a surplus of that. And it just starts hitting you with the weird shit immediately.
I don't know. I don't consider that weird shit. I just consider that, like, those aren't the pieces of Dark that I think of when I think of Dark. When I think of Dark, I think of characters being other characters, though you're not sure that they're that character until, you know, those reveals happen. I think of, like, time travel. I think of nefarious entities, like an Illuminati sort of thing happening in the background and kind of controlling events. To me, this is the early goings of this is, yes, complex because everybody seems to have secrets and identities that they don't want to reveal, but to me that's the human drama of it. That's not the weird the weird dark stuff. That's just storytelling.
Like, there is a secret a secret organization that's behind the scenes implied to be manipulating things, and there are
That's not the human the hiding of identities and stuff. I don't think has anything to do with that, but you know, we might find out two episodes from now it does.
The, What I was going at the hidden identities is that, like, if you find out that a character is actually themselves traveled back in time, it wouldn't surprise mm-hmm. you. And there's and because you don't know any, like, they could do anything with these characters because uh-huh. Even well in the episode two, they're pretty much ciphers. We just know they're haunted by a past, or they have that, you know, we don't really understand. Like, all of them, everyone on the ship seems like they're fleeing from something.
Which, I mean, it's the perfect setting for that, right? It's an immigrant ship coming to America. People don't usually immigrate from their home countries for pleasure, right? There's usually a lot of complex reasons why they're doing it.
What this setup feels like is an Agatha Christie novel with her, totally. You know, Hercule Poirot is going to try to, and it's that kind of thing where everybody looks like they're up to no good. Everybody's got something secret or something that they're trying to hide, something, and then they're going to throw what I think is a Bermuda Triangle.
Sure, slash, there's hints of that.
Everything, like some kind of hypnotism, manipulation.
Yeah, there's hints of some kind of medical procedures. They talk a lot about the human mind. The human mind is larger than the sea and bigger than the sky because it can encompass all those things.
They're doing something with it. I think.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's actually the brain. What is this? This is a quote from. Oh, it's an Emily Dickinson poem.
Okay.
But that's how they open it up with her poem about I think it's called, I guess it's being credited as Wider is the name of the poem about what the capacity of the human mind is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something else. The other thing is, you know, if I'm trying to think of things to say about this show that's not just about the plot, because the plot is essentially you open up a box that your Christmas lights were stored in last year. And it's like, oh, my God, how are these so tangled and convoluted? They were just sitting here. That's what it's like opening up this season. The show is gorgeous. Did you know that they spent a good amount of money building a German version of the volume so that they could have these giant ship sets and it looks like they're set on the sea, but they're not. They're just the volume. All if you missed all of our Star Wars coverage over the last few years, the volume is some technology they pioneered on The Mandalorian, where they have like a room that's the size of a football field with like walls and ceilings to match. And all of them are high res LED and OLED screens. So that when you have an actor standing in front of them, you can swing the camera around from all angles and it looks seamlessly like they're on that location and they're lit appropriately. You don't have to match lighting, you don't have to do anything because the volume itself is casting the appropriate shade and color of light, hue, intensity, all that stuff. And until I actually kind of wondered if they did some shots on the water because some of them are mm-hmm. were composite. So, well, they're not composite at all. They're just on the volume.
Does the volume have that they built the version have a floor der of
volume,
LCDs?
I think is what it's called.
Der volume, yeah. Does their volume have a floor of LCDs, or is it set above a tank of water?
I think it's just,
or
that,
just
like
green screen digital.
They must do that because like if you're on a boat, unless you're actually looking straight down, you probably won't. You know, like the wall itself can have the water and the horizon and it'll look just fine.
Yeah, but they do some overhead shots, like quite a few.
They do. They definitely do. Probably that's a lot of, like, especially when you're looking at the big pictures of the boats moving around. I imagine that's just all CG.
Yeah, but probably.
The practical stuff is really good. They do a lot of low light shots that are exquisite. Yeah. I think House of the Dragon should take notes out of whatever the fuck they're doing because these are inky black sets lit by individual candles and things, and yet you can see everyone and the action and get an impression of the room you're in and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this feels visually just like Dark. I mean, they have a style that they're going for, and I mean, it is Dark is its namesake because there is no real bright, intense light in the show, period. Mm-hmm. Most of it is lit by candles, by fire, flame, and the rest of it is lit by a murky, cloudy sky, overcast just constantly, if it's not just nighttime. So
and the ship itself is painted for some reason like charcoal. You know, you've seen, I'm used to seeing like the Titanic where the boat itself might be a dark color, but the decks are all bright white and they're airy and they've got teak wood floors and all this stuff. This shit is just like, yeah, it's all been, you know, what's the opposite of white? Blackwashed. It's all just been blackwashed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at first I thought it's because the ship was filthy because it was like covered, but no, it's like, I think this ship is just designed in a very, very dark, you know, not to keep coming back to that word, dark palette.
Yeah. No, it's their signature style, and it's here again.
And speaking of signature style, what about the music?
Yes, this is very Frise and Odar for sure.
Odar.
yeah. Whatever his name is.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's very synthy. It's very menacing. Mm-hmm. With a little bit of 70s psychedelic rock spun into there. A little, like,
yeah,
late
60s, the ends
early
of the
70s.
Episodes have songs by like Jefferson Airplane and Deep Purple. And yeah, they're going for a real psychedelic thing at the end, which might fit in with the brain theme stuff that they're going with. The expansion of the mind, right? That was an era of mind expansion.
It felt to me, two episodes in, like Frise and Odar are deliberately trying to construct the most puzzly puzzle box in like television history.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they are Pinhead, and they have come with the box, and they want they're challenging you to open it. And we're going to see. Our plans to cover this are, we're going to do two episodes a day. We're going to take the weekends off. So tomorrow, Friday, we'll have another two episodes. Monday, we'll have episodes 5 and 6. And then Tuesday, we'll wrap up with episode 7 and 8, right? There's just 8 episodes this season.
Yeah, and there'll be one podcast for each of those chunks.
For each of those sets. Yeah, this is how we're, you know, we always, it's kind of an experiment of how to do these Netflix shows. Oh my God. Speaking, that's the other thing. Now that we've got the coverage out of the way, I just keep coming back to, I wish this show came out 1 or 2 episodes a week.
Right? I mean, the speculation would be off the charts. And as it is, it's going to be, well, you got to watch the whole damn thing because nobody's in the same spot. Right. And then we can talk about how the season ends. But that's it.
Right. Right. And I know, like, you know, the 1899 subreddits do an episode by episode discussion that's kind of all siloed up by the episode. But it's like one of those things where the first episode has 500 comments and the second episode has 118. And it's
and
just
you
like
can't
nobody
do that with your friends. Right. No. Like, your friends aren't siloed up into neat threads that you can go into at your leisure. No, you're all going to be at different places. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and even like that's the thing is, like, by this time tomorrow, we are going to be competing with certainly print advertising and probably podcasts that I've seen the entire thing and have ready to break it down. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, I'm really curious. Like, this is kind of an experiment. We have no idea how this series would go. We did not have screeners, so we're kind of like taking it as we come. But I just think that they would have so much more water cooler potential. Like, I could see this show dominating discussions into the new year, but I suspect that before Thanksgiving, there's going to be hardly anyone talking, or by Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving, certainly there's going to be hardly anybody talking about it. We'll see. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll be wrong. As far as people who I think would like this show, like if you like with Dark in 1899, if you like those kind of puzzle box shows, if you're a big fan of early Westworld where nothing is quite where it seems, if you're, were a fan of, you know, the leftovers, because it usually has a lot of that, like, human condition stuff. It's not just a puzzle box. You know, obviously Lost, mm-hmm. X-Files, things like that. This is going to be right up your alley and right in your color palette. And if you love, I will say this too, is if you love 1899 and you haven't seen Dark, I highly recommend going back and watching all 3 seasons of that, because that is, I think, probably the definitive puzzle box show. In my mind, it's the most successful,
the most consistent, intriguing. Yeah, the consistently successful. Because I mean, Westworld went for something like that, but boy, did it fall on its face every once in a while, and then got canceled early. So, I think, like, we'll see how this show goes, but I agree. I think Dark is, if you like puzzle box shows and you haven't seen Dark, you have to watch that. It's the best of the breed.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was unsure because, like, I tried to stay away from all spoilers because I knew this was going to be a big puzzle box. I even tried to not watch many of the trailers. So it wasn't clear to me whether this was going to be like a one and done miniseries or what. But I've done some digging, and apparently there is, like, at least some sort of cliffhanger at the end of this season, and that they are hoping to do more. So if this is successful by Netflix's rights, then probably we'll get more seasons.
Yeah, I'm too scared to go digging around for any information on this show because I don't want to be spoiled. This is most shows. It's like, eh, I got a spoiler. It's fine. This show is kind of all about that stuff. So,
yes,
I feel like it has more potential getting spoilers to ruin this show than most others.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not that I don't think it would hold together on, you know, it's like, oh, you watch it and you never. But it's like, yeah, there. This is.
It's an experience.
Front and center, the pleasure is like having your jaw dropped when you find out the shocking secret and the thing that that changes, that makes you rethink everything that you've seen before. Like, this show is really good at that staying. And I guess that's the one advantage of dumping everything, is like, you don't have to worry about staying ahead of the internet sleuths. It's like, you know, it's like I guess it's in between seasons where the people that can really kind of tear into the details and start spinning lore because like, yeah, between episodes, who cares if you claim on episode two that you've got the solution, because you probably just stayed up and watched the whole thing, dude.
Right.
Okay. Do we have anything else we want to talk to before we get down? I think, you know,
zero internet points being awarded until
zero
season two.
Only between seasons one from you got to make a season two prediction starting today. That's the only way you're getting internet points. and accordingly, we're not going to consider feedback until we're done. Like, I think we might have a wrap up where we will want to talk about what's next and what's to come, if there is going to be anything to come. And but yeah, okay. Let's talk spoilers. Geez, where do we begin?
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And now, back with more Bald Move. Episode one, I guess. That seems reasonable. Maybe we should talk about the intro.
Okay.
I know it's not the very first thing you see, but the intro is... I got a very strong James Bond feel from this intro. Like a dark James Bond.
Yeah.
Rabbit, Jefferson Airplane song playing, and it's kind of in the style of, you know, a 70s era James Bond.
Very fractally, very like liquid metal things transforming into other things, and
yeah, it's got like a modern visual style and maybe a slightly older audio style to that intro.
Yeah,
for James Bond.
Clearly, this season's going to be one big triangle hunt.
Yes, the triangles are everywhere.
Triangles are fucking everywhere. Pyramids are everywhere. The Bermuda Triangle. Did you see the newspaper that the is it Mara? I think is the main character as much as anything is the main character, the neurologist. Did you see the newspaper she's reading that talks about that it's a cover? The headlines were something about the Bermuda Triangle and have you been hypnotized?
No, I just saw the big headline about the lost Prometheus.
What else in the intro? Because I didn't make detailed notes on the intro. Is there anything else that jumped out at you?
Yeah, I felt like the very last shot in the intro feels like a bullet. Like that ship that they show from overhead feels like a bullet. And maybe this is James Bond just leaking into my consciousness here. But feels like a bullet going through or across someone's face.
Oh.
And I don't know if that's going to have anything to do with like a murder mystery, because the whole show is a murder mystery, kind of, right? Like a disappearance of all these people.
Yeah, the murder of 1,000 people or so.
I don't think they went to like, I don't know, a Caribbean island and they're drinking Mai Tais. They were probably killed. So. No.
You know, I wondered, because like that particular imagery, I thought it was reminiscent of like a medical procedure, like a lobotomy. You know, like they used to stick an ice pick through your person's, you know, like the thin wall between their eye and just kind of wiggle it around like a bunch of fucking savages. I thought of that. You're thinking of Bullet. There's a whirlpool that goes down to the bottom of the ocean. And there's a couple times, like, didn't one of the little Dutch girls mention that she thought that maybe a whirlpool had taken him down to the shadow realm or something?
Yeah, it turned him into shadows. There's mention of, like, even in the opening, how the mind is bigger than the sea. And then one of them questions, like, what's down there, right? We've explored all the nooks and crannies of Earth, except for what's down below in the sea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think... I don't know. We can't really end up... Well, I don't want to say that because they're a strange sort of... In the way that The Shining does it, strange tricks of architecture on this ship that don't make any sense. Like, there's a hatch under the bed, right? In the captain's quarters.
The obsidian hatch under the captain's bed.
That goes somewhere, but we don't know where. And it's very reminiscent of the tunnels in Dark. I couldn't help but think of those. And I wonder if there's going to be some way to transport them under the sea or in something that's supposed to, you know, evoke that feeling.
Sure.
I don't know. Because I keep talking
about
it.
I thought maybe we could go through the main characters and just talk about, like, what we know about them and their situation to kind of help us get grounded, maybe start getting some of these people's names down. We opened the series with Mara, who is a neurologist from the UK that's traveling alone to America because she got a letter from her brother that says that she's found out that he's found out what his father's doing. And what his father's up to.
A letter to her brother, actually. It says Henry on the front, just like Ike's. I'm going to call him Ike, the captain. Says Ike on the front. Hers says Henry on the front. So it's a letter to her brother.
That's a good detail.
But given to her by someone.
I just thought it was like kind of like Henry is the one that wrote it. So he wrote. But you're right. That makes more sense. But it is her brother. And it says your brother. And it says he's found out what their dad is up to and come meet me in America. The odd thing is that 4 months ago she lost her brother on the Prometheus, which is a steamship that was crossing the Atlantic and was lost with all, you know, presumed lost with all hands.
She thinks he was on that ship.
She thinks he was on it. And there's an inscription on the outside of the envelope that says, what is lost will be found again.
And the same inscription
when we talked to the
Ike's.
Captain. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing about Mara is we begin the show like there's this cold open where she's screaming and yelling and it looks like she's in a mental institution and she's screaming at, I think, her father about she knows what he's done. And then we hear the words wake up and she wakes up on the Prometheus. This is something that we're going to a bit of a theme where a person will be in an intense revelry from, I presume, their past. And someone screams, wake up. And then they wake up in a different environment.
Yeah.
Which begs the question or raises the question, I should say, of what the hell is, you know, is any of this real?
Sure. Yeah. Especially when it's paired with the opening lines about how all encompassing the mind is. Right.
Yeah. There's a little bit of, I don't know if this is like a full-blown like commentary on gender or whatnot, but there's a lot of people remarking about, like, you know, women can't be doctors. They can't actually practice medicine. They can only study medicine in this era. One of the little Dutch girls who's trying to travel to America says that she wants to be a doctor and she thinks she can be in America. There's other women that are, you know, bemoaning their plight that they're stuck in this situation or that situation. I'm wondering if there's going to be, you know, some of that, those themes developed.
And she's had some kind of experiments perhaps done on her. There's a montage of really quick flashes that shows injections and straps of someone being strapped down, and it feels to me like that is her.
And her wrists are bruised. Yeah,
right.
Like, not even, this isn't even a long time ago. They're bruised and abraded as if she has been restrained in the recent past.
Yeah. So,
like, I don't even think they're weeks old. Like, they look days old.
And she says early on, like in the opening, she's yelling at her father, like, what have you done with my brother? What happened to him? And why can't I remember what happened?
Yeah.
On that ship? Does she say that?
I only saw, this is the weakness of what he's seen this once and doing a podcast.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to hinge on that. But is there anything else we can say about her at this point? Because I'm just trying to get everybody established.
I don't think so. She's almost like the most straightforward once we get past that intro, right?
Yeah, once her story is kind of pretty straightforward. A lie or memory, or she's got manipulated memories. Yeah, she's pretty straightforward except for all that. we also have, I think it's Ike Larson, who is the captain. He's a German captain. These both, the Prometheus and the Kerberos, which is the sister ship of the Prometheus. They were both German cruise liners that were bought recently by a UK company. And the captain points out that they appear to be doing a profitless run across the Atlantic, that they are steaming over with hardly any freight, with a minimal, even though they have over 1,000 people, a minimal crew complement and passenger complement for a ship of their size, and are clearly losing money on these routes. Like, so there's a mystery of like, why are they being sent on this particular passage? You know, what is the company? Why were they acquired? You know, there's a lot of mysteries, because I think there's also, it's like, why did they keep half of the crew as German? Like, why didn't they replace everybody with their own people? There's a lot of mysteries about this. This guy will, if you are a Dark veteran, you'll recognize him as not the oldest, but the middle-aged Jonah.
Yeah.
He's the most prominent face from the Dark that's from the Dark series returning. And his deep, dark secret past is his wife, apparently, while he was out on a stroll, set his whole house with his three children on fire, and he's lost his entire family, and it's driven him to drink.
Yeah, he's so haunted by that.
He could his faculties could possibly be screwed up by the alcoholism that he's succumbed to. Although he seems like he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders, despite all that.
Sure, yeah, and he's kind of. He's got a pretty big question mark around him with all the stuff that's happening with, like I mentioned, the strange architecture of the ship.
Yeah, because beneath his bed is a hatch that has a symbol, a triangle symbol on it. Did you see that this triangle symbol is the alchemaic or I guess neo-pagan symbol for the element air?
No.
That you've got air, water, fire, earth. Those are traditional symbols. And earth is a inverted triangle with a line through the tip. Water is an inverted triangle. Fire is a triangle just with the tip pointed up. And then air is that triangle pointed up with the line through the top tip. So
I feel like we might have seen most or if not all of those. In this show so far,
there's characters with a kimono that have triangle patterns on it. There's a French lady has right side up triangle earrings with stuff. So you might be right.
The rocket is just a plain triangle, no line.
Right. You might be right about that. That all of these and like I said, this was used for alchemaic formulas, and also for just like astrology, tarot type readings, any kind of like new agey pagan type stuff, which was big at the time in 1899. Those things were even sucking in intellectuals like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was all about that kind of shit. We also have Angel and Ramiro. This are posing as two Spanish brothers from Spain. And one of them is a priest and one of them is in a very manifestly wealthy upper class person. And the wealthy upper class one is fleeing the continent for some reason and is terrified to go back. Like at one point when the ship appears to be turning around, he almost has a panic attack over it. We find out that the priest is actually not Spanish. He's Portuguese. These are not brothers.
His brother, yep.
And they are both gay and in love with each other.
Yeah. And in fact, the priest, the fake priest was a Portuguese servant, right? Who?
Yes.
That's interesting, especially in the context of what you see when they're making love, you see the back of I'm gonna call him Angel.
The dandy. Yeah, Angel. Yeah.
Yeah. You see his back, and it is just covered in scarring, lash scarring. Like he's been whipped, thoroughly. So you kind of wonder, like, is he actually who he says he is? Is he some kind of like upper crust, you know, fancy man, or is he some kind of servant as well?
See, when I saw that workout through season or through the second episode, I immediately went to Downton Abbey. Like, oh, this is a rich guy who had an affair with one of his servants, the mm-hmm. house servants, and the father found out and beat him, and then they both are sure. fleeing for...
that can be it.
Unfortunately for Ramiro, Angel's having a hard time keeping things in his pants. He is hitting on... Yes. Peasant Crester? Dutch boys. Yeah, all kind of, yeah. There seems like there's a rocky road for this relationship regardless.
Yeah.
The next couple I want to talk about is Ling Yi and Yuk Jie, who are two women. The first one, Ling, is posing as a Japanese geisha girl, and Yuk is posing as her servant woman. In reality, both of these women are Chinese, and they're mm-hmm. deliberately posing to be Japanese at the behest of Miss Wilson, who is a pimp, who somehow has mastery over these women, and is ordering them to not speak and to stay in their quarters as much as possible, because if people hear him speaking Cantonese and they're expecting to hear, I don't know how anybody would. In this particular crew would tell the difference, but I guess like, yeah,
that's the thing. They yeah. use that kind of as cover, right? Cause I looked at those actors and I'm like, they are not Japanese. Sorry. Hate to break it to you. Yeah. And then, yeah, when you find out, oh, they're not actually Japanese. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And in this context, no one would realize yeah. that. Right. They make a big point about how exotic the East is yeah. because most yeah, people yeah. haven't been there at that time.
And one of the fun things about the series, unlike Dark, is that everyone, almost all of these couples we talk about, is speaking a fundamentally different language. And some yeah. of them are multilingual, but Polish. There is kind of like when they're in big group settings, they can have private conversations and you don't know who can listen, because, again, some of these uh-huh. people are surprisingly multilingual. So you just never know. But yeah, it adds a little bit of paranoia, intimacy into those settings.
Both. It's super interesting, and it adds a lot of complexity too. And I'm sure it adds a lot of complexity to the writing, because you have to always remember, hey, these characters can't speak to each other, or this character right. doesn't think that this person can understand them, but they can in actuality. Because Miss Wilson right. later on reveals, oh yeah, I speak a little French. And when she says a little, she's like fully conversant. I find that hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I speak a little.
Well, it's like, yeah. I guess that's like the difference, because like we're a very monolingual culture. So like if oh, you yeah. can say, you know, I don't know, uno más por favor, you're like, I can speak a little Spanish. But this person's like, yeah, I speak it, but I have a little bit of an accent. So I don't know if I can say I can right. actually speak it. Next, we have the couple of Clemence and Lucien, who are a newlywed French couple. Who appear to be pretty wealthy. They're afforded first-class fare. And they're trying to have sex, but there's a problem. The guy can't get it up or something. They don't appear to like each other very much. They appear nope. to not be able to stand each other's company. And it's all very mysterious. I have no fucking clue what's going on with them.
They vehemently do not want to go back on this voyage.
Nobody does. Everybody is trying yeah. to get the hell away from the continent for whatever reason. Then there's Jerome, a French stowaway, who literally pops out of a coal pile, steals uh-huh. a crew uniform, and tries to blend in unsuccessfully through two episodes. Is there a connection between this unhappy couple and this handsome French man who has stowed away in a pile of coal?
I don't know, because there is a scene between Jerome and Clemence that mm-hmm. makes me think she recognizes him or vice versa, and I can't fully read what's going on there yet.
Is that because they're in a time loop? Is that because they had an affair sure, back sure. then? Is that because, yeah, who knows? But it's something you're supposed to notice.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Miss Wilson. We talked about this Joe. We also have Oleg, who is a Polish guy who works in the engine room and is trying to get to New York so he can see his brother.
Is he the one with the Statue of Liberty photo that he keeps looking at? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's trying to get to New York to see, we find in episode two that he's trying to find his brother. So he's got a deal. Then you've got this Dutch family that I don't know their names very well. You've got Tove, who is a, I don't know, early 20s Danish woman, maybe late teens, who's going to New York with her family. She is pregnant. And the community around her, because it seems like they have a whole extended family, maybe a village traveling with them, are saying, referring to the child she's carrying as a son of God.
Yeah, and I think the there's a patriarch figure here who I think is a priest. He might be like the true priest on board. And Tove is kind of like, or Tove is kind of the matriarch of the group, at least as how she's presenting at the moment.
She doesn't seem like she seems like she's resenting the fact that everyone thinks that her child is a god baby, but she doesn't seem like she has. You thought she has a lot of power? She has a lot of power over her brother, it seems.
A lot of power over Crestor, for sure, but I don't know, because we're not getting a lot of glimpses into the structure there. It's more just told through Crestor and her at the moment. And then the younger girl,
who is a young Danish man who's traveling with their family. These guys all strike me as like proto-Amish.
Yeah, they seem like fundamental.
But they're also, this is the 1890s, so maybe there's anyone from like Dutch, German type of, they just strike me as proto, kind of like your farmer, rural person is going to strike me as that. He is, the brother of Tove. We first see him frantically. He's broken on the first deck and he goes and he's trying to find a doctor for his sister, which attracts Mara, who goes down there. She's in some kind of, like, she's 7 months pregnant. She's in some kind of distress and she's able to turn to baby to relieve that. But Crestor is got a prominent facial scar that everyone talks about, but no one wants to tell us, you know, how he got it or anything like that. It fascinates Angel. Angel has like a flirtatious attraction with this boy, offers him a cigarette, gives him a cigarette case. His sister finds out that this upper class guy is taking interest and is furious and makes him return. It doesn't make him. She just returns the cigarette, just throws that at his feet. I have no idea where that stuff is going.
Yeah.
And then, you've got the rest of the Danes, which I don't even know their names or anything much. And then you've also got some crew that I don't really know their names. They don't seem to be super important to the plot thus far. Mm-hmm. That's it. Those are the main characters, the dramatis personae.
You've got the little boy. There's a little boy on board now. They actually two people that we didn't really talk about. The little boy, whose name I don't actually know.
It's the boy at this point.
It's the boy.
They've only referred to him as the boy.
And then there's another person who came on board recently, Daniel. He just kind of climbs out of the water as they're investigating the Prometheus and boards the ship.
I think it's even tied to the second the boarding party sets foot on the other ship, he sets foot on theirs. Like there might be some kind of
tit for signal stops and all
principle
that
principle thing. Yeah, like, as soon as, because. So the setup of this is you've got the Prometheus, by the way, named after the Greek god who stole fire from the gods and gave it to humanity. And for his punishment, he was staked to a tree and condemned to have crows peck out his liver, which continually regenerated for all of eternity. Seems harsh, but, you know, those Greeks, they ruled that way.
Eternal punishment seems harsh to me, but
yeah, how can you do anything in a finite time span to merit an infinite punishment? I don't know, but you know, gods, they be crazy, I've heard. And then this sister ship is the Kerberos, which is the German spelling for Cerberus, which is the three-headed dog that guards the gates of hell, that keeps undead spirits from wandering out. Lots of mythological underpinnings here. But 4 months after the Prometheus tries to sail across the Atlantic and is lost, presume all hands lost, they're making several passengers commenting on what are the odds that the sister ship from the same steam line are going to sink. Probably odds pretty good. I've seen the whirlpool in the credit sequence. I'm thinking odds pretty good. They're following them on the same path, and they get halfway across and they start getting a telegraph signal that appears to be from the Prometheus giving a position.
And the captain deviates
from the sail plan over 7 hours, which infuriates a lot of the crew and the passengers to go investigate. And they find the sister ship Prometheus. It's completely adrift. It's a ghost ship. I thought it looked like it spent time underwater. Did you get that impression?
When they get inside of it, it seems like 4 months at sea is a pretty short time to do this kind of damage. But
there's seaweed in the hallways, yeah, and kind of like hanging off the deck and all that kind of stuff. I thought that was really interesting. The fact that this looks like it might have been on the bottom of the sea and is now, and it was sending this telegraph signal from a telegraph room that has been destroyed.
Yeah, the telegraph was totally, I don't know if it was rusted. It almost looks rusted out, doesn't it?
Yeah, or set on fire.
Maybe. Okay.
It's hard to say because, like, again, the ship in pristine condition on the Prometheus or on the Kerberos looks like it's been set on fire or something. It looks like a cinder. Uh-huh.
And also, like, when you're on the Kerberos and the halls are lit with candlelight, it's very dark. Now go to a ship that has no candlelight.
Right.
And tell me anything you see, honestly.
So they explore and they go to, I think it's the banquet hall or the dance hall or whatever. And Mara, who has been, you know, the captain handpicks a crew of essentially people brave enough or low enough on the totem pole, he can bully them into going. The priest, who he thinks is a priest, and this lady doctor who helped out with the turning of the baby. And they go over and explore. The lady doctor sees this shiny green beetle, which I think is some form of scarab beetle, if the internet's to be believed. She sees it crawl into some kind of credenza that's been locked from the outside with like a fire poker or some kind of like crowbar. And there's loud banging, like super loud banging, like there's a monster inside there. The captain gets his gun out. They open up the door and there's this little boy. There's like a 5-6 year old little boy.
This is insane, there. Man. Speak to the thing in there. See if it's human. See what it is. Like, just say hello. Is someone in there? And I know the boy wouldn't have answered, right? Because he seems to be scared mute or whatever.
But you would like to see the humans act human, yeah.
Yeah. Not just go up there to whip the crowbar out. Like, clearly somebody locked something in there because it couldn't be locked from the inside. This is not defensive. This is offensive.
Yeah. So the captain brings the boy back to the ship. And radios back to the headquarters about what to do. They send them a two-word response, which is sink ship, mm-hmm, and presumably get back to doing what you're doing. And he's like, "What? This makes no sense. This is 40,000 tons of seaworthy vessel, and we're both sent on this unprofitable, you know, voyage on the same thing, and they want me to sink this? Nah, fuck. They must be hiding something." So he decides to tow it back to Europe, which pisses literally everyone off. It scares the crew because, like, the German crew that thinks like they can't believe they're there. They must be on thin ice with this company. They're directly disobeying the company. They're kind of creeped out by all this. Everyone that's running from everything is not wanting to go back. So there's probably going to be, I don't know, sabotage. Who knows what we're going to have to deal with. That's kind of the setup. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't a joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
And now, back with more Bald Move. Now, we can talk about, there's another interesting thing. The guy who pulls himself in from the ocean, you said his name is Daniel?
I think so, yeah.
He also has this green beetle that seems like it serves him. Like, he goes to the door, the wardroom that's across, that's the next door neighbor to Mara, lets this beetle under the door, it unlocks a door for him. The beetle comes back to him. He keeps it in his pocket. It's like, again, he's got some kind of control over it. It seems. You're making a frowny face. You disagree
IMDb
with that
is
assessment?
Telling me, no. IMDb is telling me his name is Daryl, but I could have sworn I saw it as Daniel.
Okay.
So it's either Daryl or Daniel.
Oh, weird. Because you're right. Wikipedia. The Wikipedia page has him as Daniel.
Okay.
Daniel Solis.
So IMDb is wrong. It's Daniel.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Or maybe that's German spelling. Because there was a lot of that too. Like in Dark,
sure.
Where, you know, they emphasize the name.
Ike is not IKE either, like I would expect. It's EYK.
Right. So that's the main situation. I want to talk about some maybe we can trade like weird shit that we observed.
Yeah, I want to talk about one thing that this show is doing that I guess not sure how I feel about. I feel like it's leaning a lot on the reputation of Dark in some ways. And maybe this is my own bias having seen Dark, but I felt like when this show starts to get creepy, or it gets creepy too early, like these people are just sailing on the sea, right? And they come across a signal that's telling them, hey, here's a location, and they go there and they find this ship that's been missing for 4 months. And the captain says, I'm going to lower down a lifeboat and we're going to go over there. And everybody's like, are you fucking insane? This is obviously a ghost ship. I don't know why everybody is so scared of it at that point. I feel like
this is
Dark.
This is 1899. This is very like,
it's a superstitious
sailors are already
time,
hella
sure.
superstitious. And like, they're probably 100 years behind society. And this is a society 120 years behind us. So. And we're still a pretty superstitious, stupid society.
I don't know. To me, it felt like they were pushing you in a direction. Like, think this is mysterious. Think this is dark. But yeah, I also buy that, hey, it's just a superstitious bunch. Why not?
What do you know about the Bermuda Triangle?
Next to nothing. I know ships supposedly disappear there all the time.
So it's formed by a triangle. If you take Miami, Florida, so the tip of Florida, Bermuda, and then Puerto Rico, that section of the ocean is supposedly responsible for a disproportionate share of ships and airplanes that have been lost. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are under mysterious circumstances where, you know, people were saying that their compasses were stopped working, that the navigational instrumentation of planes were not working before they lost contact, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been a source of fascination ever since the mid 20th century. Probably bullshit, like most of these things are, but clearly with the triangle association, clearly with calling attention to it on the newspaper headline, we are supposed to be thinking mm-hmm. about the Bermuda Triangle. The thing that's not clear to me is going to New York City would not get you anywhere near the Bermuda Triangle.
Right, right.
So I wonder if there is some other inverted triangle, some other place in the ocean there that this boat company is exploring. Because that's what I think you're supposed to think happening is that there is a clandestine group of people who are investigating some kind of paranormal thing, and they're sending these ships across with low amounts of crew, passengers, and cargo to poke the bear.
Minimize their losses when they inevitably don't come back, hoping that they might discover something. Yeah.
Yeah, to kind of check things out. At least that's what the captain seems to be thinking is happening.
Honestly, you should load it the fuck up with passengers, though, right? Just load it. Book every single double book every room.
If you're afraid you're going to lose it, why?
So you can get the money up front. Because they're all paying up front, right? If you're going to lose it, at least cover some more of your losses. Load it full. Minimal crew, maximum passengers. That's what I would think.
Maybe they have a ghost of a conscience. They're trying to minimize the loss of human lives.
I don't think so.
It's the Maester, undesirable types.
It's Qyburn at the head of this. I don't know if you could tell that that's who that was, but her dad, Mara's dad, is Qyburn.
It is not.
It totally is. Yes, it is. So there's no fucking way.
Oh my god, it is. Oh my god, it fucking is.
He's 100% sinister. He's not. He doesn't have a shred of conscience.
Yeah, yeah. We already know he's up to something because his progeny found it and they've told each other about it. We just don't know what it is. We just know that there is something he's up to, and it's something. Mm-hmm. did you notice that when everyone is in the common room, the dining room, the simultaneous tea sip?
Super weird.
Did you notice the geisha girl? Well, I guess the fake geisha girl.
I mean, I noticed her. What about her?
When she's drinking the tea, her hand kind of glitches. Like a hitch in a videotape.
Interesting. I didn't notice that. I was super curious what they were doing with the simultaneous drinking. Because I was thinking, maybe thematically they're trying to say how ordered everything is in this society. But these are such disparate societies, it wouldn't make any sense, right? These people don't come from the same place. So, something weird's going on.
And there's a whole bunch of sayings that are going around, the geisha girl and her servant, the fake geisha, the Cantonese women, they're hiding out as Japanese women, have this saying that they say to each other, which is everything will be OK in the end. And if it's not OK, then it's not the end. I felt like there's interesting resonance with the inscription on the matching letters that Ike and Mara got, that everything lost will be found again.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like these sentiments have, I don't know what the fuck it even means. I'm just pointing things. I'm pointing things out. Faith and fate.
Uh-huh. And you have one fake priest. You have what's possibly one real priest on board.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the experience that was Dark, there was a lot of that in there too, right?
Sure.
Elements. And it was more concrete too. It wasn't even just thematic.
Yeah. The boy gives Mara what I can only describe as a black obsidian pyramid artifact.
It almost looks like it's made out of coal. Is that possible?
I thought it had seams. Yeah, that's a fair way to say it. It's got like that kind of crystalline structure where it looks mm-hmm. like parts of it have flaked off or whatnot. I thought it was going for more of a Hellraiser type of thing where like this thing might open or transform or yeah, have things that it can. Like I was, but you're right. It could just
I think
be,
it could be both, honestly. Like this show is weird enough.
Right. Is it an animal? Is it a vegetable? Is it mineral? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's looking mineral right now. Another weird thing. So in episode two opens up with the captain having a disturbing memory of him out walking, coming back to his house. It's engulfed in flames. He screams Nina, which I think is his wife's name. And he hears this wake up, and we see him open his eyes. His pupils are triangles. Really fucking weird.
Whoa.
You didn't notice that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When he first wakes up, his pupils are triangles. And then he wakes up and sees that he's in this weird hatch and climbs out of it and discovers that he's underneath his own bed. Mm-hmm. And frustratingly, when he goes to try to explore this, it looks like it's built out of the smooth, polished obsidian brick. And he gets to the bottom of this. Oh, yeah.
Like black subway tiles.
He gets to the bottom of this hatch and he starts to explore it, and he's immediately called, you know, he's got to go back on deck to he finds out that the little Dutch girl who wanted to be a doctor is lying murdered on the deck.
Mm-hmm. And I'm almost positive that it was Daniel who murdered her. Because there's a scene there where he's talking to her. It's near the end of the episode. And he goes up to her, and I forget exactly what he says, but there at the end of their scene, there is like a switchblade sort of knife being pulled sound, and then she shows up dead. So
yeah, there's like this snicker snack sound. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what they want you to believe, right?
And he says, "I'm so sorry," when he
does say "so sorry,"
but at the end of that scene,
the noises are kind of disconnected from that scene. I thought the way it was edited,
it's possible.
So it's like I said, I think there's something more to what they're showing here. Surprise, surprise. Uh-huh. Here's another weird thing: wolves and sheep are mentioned several times. When they find the little boy and the fact that the rest of the boat has been killed. One of the guys that works in a boiler room, like he's kind of portrayed as simple-minded idiot, but he says, "What if it was a wolf that did it?" And the guy's like, "You stupid idiot. A wolf's going to eat. What if it was a giant wolf?" And he's like roundly dismissed. During one scene when people are gossiping about the fake Japanese women, they mentioned that her lady servant looks like a sheep. Mm-hmm. And then I forget where this I got it. I wish I wrote down the context, but Mara sees, or maybe it's the captain sees, a painting of wolf and a sheep standing together, like a Renaissance painting.
I noticed that too. I noticed that painting, and maybe it's not the same painting. Maybe you're talking about a different scene. But when I noticed it, it was when Angel and Ramiro were making love. It pans up.
That's right.
Above
that's
them.
Right. It's in their stateroom.
Okay. Yeah. There's an oil painting there of that. So.
What the fuck is up with that? Is this little boy a werewolf and he actually did eat everybody?
So I'm wondering, because this boy is weird, right? Like they find him in a cupboard or like in a bar locked
in. And he's locked in there.
Like someone was trying to keep him from getting out. Like it's a cage. And then when they bring him on board.
Yeah.
And the banging didn't sound like a boy.
The banging did not sound like a little child. It sounded like a monster trying to get out before they opened it.
And then they bring him on board the ship. They make a point earlier in the episode to say this ship has been at sea for 4 months. They would not have the food to sustain them. Like unless they like heavily rationed, maybe a couple of them made it, but everyone's dead on that boat from starvation. But the boy, when he comes aboard, Mara offers him some bread and an apple, and he doesn't take it. He's not hungry after 4 months at sea with no food, locked in a cupboard.
Versus a man who's been in a coal pile for perhaps a day who's ravenously hungry.
Exactly. Yeah. So something is wrong with this child. He doesn't speak. That's creepy and weird, right?
So then another weird thing is like the end of each episode when they show like the little kid, the boy in the cupboard, they start playing, the White Rabbit, you know, just mm-hmm. psychedelic rock. They fire up Child in Time for Deep Purple at the end of the second episode where the captain finds the dead girl. and they have the captain's shocked face, and you keep panning out, and you find out that we're actually watching the captain's face on a fucking TV monitor.
And this is where I was in. Yep.
That's embedded in a whole wall, like this lacquer wall of monitors, like these square monitors who are kind of old-timey, but they're fucking television monitors. Right,
remember what year we're in.
And they're watching all of the important people from this ship. They're watching tight on their faces. What the fuck?
And that room that it's in almost looks like it could be the captain's quarters.
It does. It has that kind of like that dark lacquered, shiny polished wood. Yeah, it could be, or it could be. Maybe that's the secret passage room is what I assumed. Like, if we get to the bottom of that, we're going to see it's all done up with this. But like, so this music is anachronistic. But if I had to say, I would say those monitors are from the 60s or 70s.
They could be.
Mm-hmm. So is the music.
Mm-hmm. Get expand your mind, Aaron.
So is it
is it
time traveling? The other idea that I saw is that this is simulation. That people are running simulations to try to find out what happened to these ships. And these are, we're essentially seeing people running these simulations. It's
interesting because Kerberos is also an encryption scheme.
Right.
That's like a much more modern use of the word.
Sure.
So I don't know if they're going to lean into some kind of networked computer simulation thing. It's possible. Yeah.
It's possible that all these people are, because like the other thing about the Prometheus, because I think about Prometheus, that's something that's doomed to repeat something. And then when I think about Kerberos, I think about, people in hell that can't escape. Are these people already dead? And they're in it? Because did you ever see the movie Triangle? Which is
no,
a movie about a boat set in the Bermuda Triangle. You should watch it. It's a really interesting looping time story. It's one of the cooler things I've seen. And I kept on thinking about this as I was watching this, you know, the Bermuda Triangle with Triangle. I wonder if these people are stuck in some kind of recursive time loop.
All right. That's a pretty good guess at the moment.
And that the '70s are some kind of like people that are trying to get inside the loop or something. I have no fucking clue.
Right. Maybe she's been, Mara, the she in this sentence is being experimented on in the '70s, being injected with LSD. Cause you think of all these, like the experiments they did with LSD and the psychedelic music, and all that would maybe connect. And she's just imagining she's in 1899.
Right. And I can't hear White Rabbit without thinking of like Psychonaut drug exploration. I mean, that's what the whole song's about. Like, it's fucking popping pills. Your moms don't do shit, but these are going to expand your mind, baby.
But it's super interesting to me that what is being displayed on the monitors is not something that could really be happening in the '70s or sixties or whatever. It's what's happening on that ship.
Yes, for sure.
So you think like maybe they're connected up to their brains and sort of like reading what they're experiencing and displaying it visually. And it's not even from like a person's POV. It's from the omniscient camera's POV, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, we're seeing through the eyes of Mara or we're seeing through the eyes of Ike. We're seeing Ike through the eyes of a camera.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very mysterious, man. Is there anything else we want to talk about? Is that the majority of the mystery as we see thus far?
The one last question I have is, you know who Franz is? He's like the big, I want to call him a bodyguard, but I think he just works in the engine room. Or he's part of the crew.
Captain. Yeah, he's the amazing guy. Beard that is like the captain's right man hand. Right hand man. Yeah.
My only question is, when is he going to wash the blood off of his face? It's been like three scenes and he's still just covered in blood.
I had the same, because like that's, we didn't talk about that is, what's his name? It wasn't Jacques. It was Jerome. Is he a super soldier? Because he took on like five dudes his size in a cramped hallway, and they could not get their hands on him.
Right.
Like, I thought that he fought like, I don't know, a lot of these guys look like tough dudes that know how to fight, mm-hmm. but he was just handing them their ass until they all were able to like slowly beat him down.
Yeah. No,
and we don't know also, we don't know what they've done with him, right? Like, last we knew is Franz said, you know what we do with stowaways? And then we haven't seen, like, I don't know if he's in the brig. I don't know if he's locked in a stateroom. I don't know if they did, in fact, throw him overboard or what.
Could be. I don't know. Haven't seen him since.
Is there any other juice we could need to squeeze?
I don't think so. I'm looking forward to the next couple of episodes.
Yeah, so tomorrow we're going to watch a couple more. We're going to talk about episodes 3 and 4, and then we'll take the weekend off, and we'll be back for more coverage again Monday and Tuesday. As I mentioned, we are going to be taking feedback. You can send it to our general pulp line, pulp@baldmove.com. We're going to save all that up for the end of the season and probably do a retrospective and maybe speculation for next season, if there's going to be a next season. Yeah, feel free to send us any mid-season thoughts, too. It's just like, you know, you're really taking... really risking a lot of dry pie, mm-hmm. you know, when you're taking out a stand in the midseason. But yeah, let's all watch all this stuff, catch up with each other, send us some feedback, pulp@baldmove.com. We'll consider it. But yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with some more episodes. If you like to follow everything we do here at Bald Move, twitter.com/baldmove.
And for the time being, till that whole thing implodes.
God, I picked one social media to concentrate on, and how did I know it was going to get taken over by a James Bond villain? But yeah, we're until that thing implodes. And if you would like to support us and get ad free feeds and a bunch of other bonus content, check us out at support.baldmove.com to find out all the ways you can support us. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow for some more 1899. Until then, I'm Aaron,
and I'm Jim.
See ya.